CBS's Robert Costa is in Charleston with more on the Trump-Haley face-off.
It's a high-stakes day for the former governor, Nikki Haley. But win or lose in South Carolina, she told me she is going to carry on arguing to Republicans across the country that she's in a better position to beat President Joe Biden than former President Donald Trump.
It's been 2 years since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and BBC correspondent Lise Doucette tells us European leaders have converged in Ukraine, showing their support.
From Poland, a train pulled in to the station here, bringing the prime ministers of Canada, of Belgium, of Italy, along with the president of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen. She said she wanted to be here on what she described as a day of solidarity, to stand next to Ukrainians, to say that Ukraine's fight was also the fight of Europe and the wider democratic world.
A ruling in the civil corruption trial of former NRA head Wayne LaPierre. Here's CBS's Errol Barnett.
After a week of deliberation, a New York jury found Wayne LaPierre liable of fraudulently spending NRA donor funds. He's been ordered to pay back more than $4.3 million.
The money spent on trips, jets, hotels, and more. Pack light if you're flying somewhere. Another airline just jacked up its prices to check your bags. Julie McDonald is with CBS Boston.
United is the latest airline after American and JetBlue to announce a fee increase for checked bags, meaning the carry-on crowd could have more company.
It adds up. I mean, half the airlines, they charge you to pick your seat in advance, too.
Starting this weekend, economy class passengers on domestic United flights will be charged $5 more, to $35 if they pay online at least 24 hours before the flight, and $40 at the airport. The price of a second checked bag will also go up $5, to $45 in advance online and $50 at the airport.
A robotic lunar lander named Odysseus is now on the moon. Intuitive Machines CEO and co-founder Steve Artemis on what's happening on the mission.
We're downloading and commanding, downloading data from the buffers in the spacecraft and commanding the spacecraft and trying to get you surface photos, because I know that everyone's hungry for those surface photos.
The mission marks a milestone. It's the first moon landing by an American company. In a statement, President Biden called it a thrilling step forward in a new era of space exploration. This is CBS News.
Download the free Upside app to earn real cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code RADIO for an extra 25 cents per gallon on your first fill up. That's promo code RADIO.
New numbers suggest they're making progress. Mike Moan reports.
This month, the USDA released the new Census of Agriculture, data that only comes around every 5 years. Mike Lavender with the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition says there's numbers detailing how much farmland is being used for climate-friendly practices. He notes there were some bright spots, but also room for opportunity.
Some of the data that we're seeing within the census reinforces for us that in so many ways it is about access to programs within USDA or information, making sure that we can use all of those avenues to drive adoption in the way that we know there is demand for.
Conservation data examples include an increase in the use of no-till practices, while the number of farmers using rotational grazing is down. Between 2017 and 2022, Wisconsin farmers boosted key conservation work, including the planting of cover crops. And while the data is new, Lavender cautions it doesn't capture how farmers are responding to new incentives from the federal government.
This is certainly pre-Inflation Reduction Act investment data. So while this is, of course, accurate and really important to wrap our heads around, there's even newer data that we're getting from Inflation Reduction Act funding demand that it's important to take into account.
The IRA provided nearly $20 billion to bolster funding for popular conservation programs. The USDA reported that applications exceeded the extra funding that was set aside. Ag researchers have noted while there's demand for these incentives, farmers have often faced barriers to being approved, with only 1 in 4 applicants being successful. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine and a high of 35. Mostly clear tonight, breezy 29. And breezy for your Sunday, partly sunny 52. In the upper 50s to near 60 on your Monday, but still on the breezy side. Tuesday, breezy and 63 degrees. Currently, 13 degrees.
Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM.
Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM.
This is The Shaw, WAUK.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Jim Santel, and yes, I am your host for this hour and next hour here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. Delighted to be with you this morning. Delighted that you are with me on what is going to turn out to be a special edition of our Saturday morning broadcast. I will tell you all about that in just a few moments. As always, this is our weekly review, our analysis, our description of the major events, those significant things happening in our lives, locally, in the state, in the nation, and yes, this morning also in the world, that affect what? That affect government and law and the aspiration for justice that we all have, including right here in our state and in our nation. As always, we have an ambitious but achievable agenda, again, added on to today with something very special that we've never done before. Very excited about that, to tell you about that in just a few moments. As always, our questions are focused on three principal things, and that is, what happened? What do we know about the recent news events of our lives? Why are they important? Why are they significant? That's our second major question. And third, what should we do about them? If there are things that we should react to, respond to, what should we be thinking about in terms of making our own decisions about the things that have happened, understanding why they're significant material in our lives, and the things that we should do in response to those? We're going to be asking and answering all of those questions for you this morning in this first hour and our next hour as well. I am delighted to be with you and also to be with my wonderful producer, Calvin, right here in the Civic Media Studios here in downtown beautiful Waukesha. But we are broadcasting again throughout stations throughout the state of Wisconsin. And yes, indeed, here's your teaser. We're actually going to be involving some of my colleagues here in the Civic Media Network coming from Cable, Wisconsin. Yes, indeed, we're going to be doing some cut-ins, some information, some conversation about the all-important Birkebeiner cross-country ski race. It is the largest cross-country ski race in North America, and we'll be talking about it live to you as it's going on this morning. This has been a part of the Civic Media presentation throughout this past week. I've got some great friends and guests who are going to be joining me on four occasions in the next couple of hours. Greg and Gray, I'll introduce them shortly, are going to be talking with me and talking with all of us about the things that they are perceiving, the things that they're experiencing there in Cable, in Hayward. This all-important sporting event affected this year by the weather, but not at all dampened in spirit and enthusiasm. We're going to be talking all about the Birkebeiner, and yes, indeed, there is a connection, a strong connection, which we'll get to in just a few moments, between their work there in Hayward and Cable, the involvement of all of these sports enthusiasts, these cross-country skiers, and rule of law issues, government, and the commitment that all of us should make to good government. The focus, a lot of focus this morning, on the involvement of human beings in making certain that government remains viable and the significance of being out there to be responsible for government. I'm going to talk about some history that leads up to the Birkebeiner here in Wisconsin that goes back 825 years. Some rule of law history, some rule of law perspective that's also going to animate our discussions with my friends Gray and Greg in just a few moments. Before we get to that, let me tell you about the other things that are going to be on our important, achievable syllabus this morning. We are necessarily going to be talking once again about Supreme Court-related issues, and that has to do with things like firearms. Just yesterday, we know that the head of the NRA and the NRA itself was on the receiving end of a major jury verdict, And we're going to talk about that, the significance of that, inside our larger discussion about firearms. And indeed, we're going to go back and talk a little bit about this Michigan case against the mother and ultimately the father as well of a young man who's already pled guilty to an horrific shooting there in Michigan. We're going to talk about the consequences of that inside our larger discussion about firearms in America. We're also, of course, going to talk about this other major issue having to do with the embryos and whether or not embryos are human beings. This decision by the Alabama Supreme Court that I suspect all of you have heard about. I'm going to parse that, describe that, and talk there again about the consequences of that major decision having to do with privacy rights and reproductive rights, the connection between what the Alabama Supreme Court has done and the things that are out there generally in our world. And then we're going to also chat about academics, all these things somewhat related to the Supreme Court. We're going to talk about a decision made by Yale University just this past week having to do with admissions. We're going to go back and figure out what has happened in the wake of the June decision of last year by our United States Supreme Court having to do with the decision about prohibiting schools from addressing race as one of the considerations when it comes to admissions. So we've got issues on firearms, on embryos and reproductive life and reproductive issues, academics. I'm going to do some updates as well about these major cases involving Donald Trump, the judgment entered against him just yesterday by the New York court, the decision that's still pending in front of the Supreme Court having to do with his immunity defense in the federal case. We're also going to go back and talk about something we haven't talked about in a while, and that is that Florida case involving Mar-a-Lago, the documents case. What is Judge Eileen Cannon doing there? What are the recent events, and what can we anticipate this coming week and a hearing that she's got scheduled on next best steps there? And finally, in the category generally of our focus this week on things related to timing and on the world in which we live, we're going to talk more about some of the international issues, including things going on in places like Brazil and Pakistan and Germany. All of those also have lessons for us here in America, reverberating also for us here in America when it comes to our own politics, our own government, and our own aspiration for justice. All of that on our agenda, our syllabus this morning, including again, just right after our first break, we're going to be talking with my friends Gray and Greg about the Birkebeiner cross-country ski race. So let me do some history, some rule of law history as a predicate for that discussion coming up in just about 5 or 6 minutes or so. Has to do with a young man named Prince Haakon, H-A-A-K-O-N. He was born in the village of Falkenberg in Norway, and probably in the summer of 1204, maybe spring of or so of that year. His father was a king. His name is Haakon Severson. And Inga had been with Haakon at the time of the birth of young Haakon. So what happens is that Haakon Severson was the leader of something called the Birkebeiner faction. The Birkebeiner faction in an ongoing civil war with a competing group called the Baglers, B-A-G-L-E-R. And Haakon, the king, was dead by the time his son, young Haakon, was born. And his mother's claim, Inga's claim, was supported by several of Haakon Severinsen's followers. She were again the remaining matriarch of the family. He was born, young Haakon, into the Bagler-controlled territory in that area, and his mother's claim, his mother's position, placed young Haakon at the time in a very serious, a perilous position for his life. And the Baglers, that is, again, the competing group there in the early part of the 13th century, started hunting for young Haakon. A group of the Birkebeiners, again, interested in protecting their government, their basis for their livelihood there, found the young child in the winter of 1205-1206, and they picked him up to keep him from getting abducted and arguably even killed by the Baglers, the competing faction there, and they headed for a king, Inga Bardsson. He was the new Birkebeiner king in that area, and the party that took him, especially two skiers in particular, are bringing young Haakon across the land. They're stricken by a blizzard. And two of those very best skiers carried on with the young child over the mountains, and they eventually arrive at the location of the king. They bring young Haakon to safety with King Inga, and that event is commemorated even in modern-day Norway by this popular skiing event known there as the Birkebeiner Rennet. The Birkebeiner Rennet. That dramatic childhood incident, that is being young,
being the target of an attempted abduction, arguably even attempted homicide by the competing faction. And the decision by these very brave Birkebeiners to take the young boy and bring him through the winter on their cross-country skis, posing some great danger to themselves, all of that gives rise not only to this great event that did happen in Norway, and again in 1205, 1206, the winter of that year. All of that gives rise not only to that great story here, but also to this rule of law notion that exists in Norway to this day. That is the importance of understanding what your government is all about. Again, even there, at the time, obviously they have got a monarchy, as do many other countries in Europe at that time, even to this day. But they recognize the importance of a legitimate government, and they recognize the significance of not engaging in violence to upset or in any way to countermand or undermine that governmental authority. Issues that reverberate even to us to this day in this nation when we think about the future of our nation. We don't have a monarchy. We all know that. 240 years we have thrown that off from the king in England. But one of the continuing messages of today's discussion on law and government, the aspiration for justice, is going to be all about this focus on what people themselves do to preserve the government, at least the trappings of government, so that we've got those rights that we do have here in America, other places, things like freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, freedom of faith expression, all those kinds of things. That's what, in many ways, this story about young King Haakon is all about. And yes, indeed, it always is going to be important, as we understand right here in Wisconsin, that event in Norway prompted the creation of our own Birkebeiner, which again is this ski race, this cross-country ski race. It is the largest cross-country ski race in North America, right here in Wisconsin, Cable, Hayward, that part of our world. About 5.5, almost 6 hours from where I'm broadcasting, Calvin and I are this morning. We're going to be joining right after this break by folks who are up there. Again, my colleagues, Greg Gunderson and Greg Griesel, are going to be joining me to talk about what they're witnessing, what they've been involved in this past week in the Wisconsin Birkebeiner, the National Birkebeiner, this important place in our state, this great sporting event that also I would offer to you this morning in the context of our own Saturday morning broadcast, is even in its sporting elaborateness, even in its exaltation of sporting and the great things going on right there, is also an affirmation of the rule of law and of justice and of things that government can and should do to make the country, make the locality, make the state better. All of those issues packed into our discussion coming up here on our Saturday morning broadcast. Right after this break, we're going to be going to Cable and talking about the Birkebeiner and my good friends, Gray and Greg. Stay with me for that important discussion right here on our Saturday morning broadcast. Stay with us and join us as well.
The Shaw, WAUK. The Todd Albaugh Show.
I'm Trigvi Olsen. Steven from Green Bay, go ahead.
The city of Green Bay is one of the best places in Wisconsin to live. Plenty of people that are Wisconsin nice.
Totally agree. Green Bay is kind of swing territory between the two parties, but people in Green Bay work together. I mean, people aren't asking themselves, am I wearing a red hat or a blue hat? They're wearing green and gold hats.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Earl Ingram.
My special guest is the curator and founder of Wisconsin's Black Historical Society, none other than Claiborne Benson.
I want people to know that Wisconsin has a beautiful, rich African-American history. Many people think the King celebration and all of those other kinds of things are more important. They occurred in Wisconsin as well, and we've impacted the entire nation.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for matinee on air.
are back. And my name is Jim Santel. I'm your host this hour and next hour. Right now, a very special feature on our Saturday morning broadcast. Delighted to have you participating with Calvin and me and my good friends, Gray Gunderson and Greg Griesel. Both of them, Greg and Gray, are right now in Cable, Wisconsin, and they're participating. They're looking at, they're going to be talking with us right now about the Birkebeiner Cross Country Ski Race. Greg and Gray, glad to have you with me this morning on our Saturday morning broadcast.
Happy to be here, Jim. Thank you so much for letting us broadcast in on behalf of WBZH here out of Hayward, our civic media station in Hayward. Of course, Big G and I are in Cable. And if you don't mind, we'd like to just immediately thank our sponsor, Cut Impossible, today.
Please do just that. That's important.
I echo that, Jim. Thank you very much for letting us come on your show today.
The first couple sponsors we'd like to thank are actually located right in Hayward. They would be River and Rain Wellness Boutique and Advanced Printing of Hayward, and Big G's got a couple as well.
Yeah, I want to thank the Lakewood Cafe on Railroad Street. Great burgers and delicious pie, and also thank Lakeside Property Service of Park Falls, Wisconsin, for helping us do this broadcast this afternoon from our broadcasting here at WBZH Radio, the Buzz of the North, and our network of civic media stations.
And an extra special thank you to the Cable Natural History Museum for the American Birkebeiner. The number of people compared to the cell signal available in a town of this size, I'm afraid we were forced into a Wi-Fi territory instead.
And that's a good thing, Gray, because you know what? We can hear you just fine, and listeners can do just the same. Just great, just great. So the two of you have been up there all week, yes?
Well, we actually were here. We started, our presence here began mostly yesterday. There has been a civic media presence in the area all week, beginning with Todd Albaugh, who has been doing his live show from the WBZH offices in Hayward for most or all of this week. And he was able to take in, well, as some of our other colleagues, Catherine Lake was able to take in some Berkey as well. We primarily have been witnessing it firsthand as of yesterday, and we'll be seeing a little bit more of it today. Today kind of being the main event, or the main day of events among the 5 days that the Berkey covers.
Yeah, it's an incredible atmosphere up there, Jim. When you go up there, it's like Mother Nature didn't cooperate with us this year as far as snow conditions. And, you know, you drive up here, you see brown grass and in the woods and stuff, and you drive through the woods, and all of a sudden there's this winter wonderland with all these cross-country skiers, the colors, big entertainment tent there, great stage there. And
just out of nowhere, it's quite incongruous. The drive compared to the destination, it's amazing the discrepancy you see.
Hats off to everybody that helped pull this thing off this year.
Absolutely. And so tell us about that. So we've got a manufactured snow, and it looks spectacular. You mentioned before it looks like almost like a Disney movie. How did that happen? How did that come about?
Well, actually, the decision on what the Berkey would be, and frankly, whether there would be a Berkey this year, given the Wisconsin weather that we've had, was not finalized until the 12th of February, just under 2 weeks ago. And so the decision having been made at that time only allowed so much time for preparation between decision and race day. And long story short, snow since January, and the amount of snow that has been manufactured by far supersedes the amount that has fallen naturally. So I would estimate a maximum natural snow content of 5% in what is being used as the track, which is over 6 miles of 1-foot to 3-foot thick track. Again, these are my estimates, but the amount of snow hauled, placed, groomed repeatedly is quite astounding. The human effort involved is a sight to behold all its own when you get to the track here.
It's incredible the way they got it set up and they got it graded so nice, and the way they're able to keep the snow is amazing. Just incredible.
And I'm going to guess that effort also produced lots of human beings there participating in the ski race. Tell me about that. Tell us all about the human beings who are there, the population, the show up for this major event.
Yeah, everybody is so excited. I mean, they got the cowbells going and everything going over there, and the colors, and the skiers really have some colorful outfits, and just walking around there walking and talking to some people there, and like I said, there's skiers from all over the world here. I mean, you're talking from all over the country here.
I think I saw a winner from Florida,
Germany,
yesterday. Yep.
Norway, UK,
all around the world.
All the countries are represented. Switzerland, Sweden.
Yeah, if you look at the leaderboards for any given event, there's a pretty solid chance that there's a Scandinavian at the top or somebody from Clam Lake just a couple miles away from here. So it's a fantastic international effort to cooperation in the participation as well as the local effort making it possible was nothing short of astonishing. It's quite evident. You walk up to this improvised 10-kilometer loop track with what is essentially a concert space in the middle that they call the celebration area so that you can be right up close to all of the action during all of the events. They're going right by you. You're not encouraged to reach out and touch the skiers as they go by, but if a person were so encouraged, so.
Absolutely.
And these events are for all ages. So.
And yeah, young people and older people as well. Before we break in this first segment, and you guys are going to come back later in the hour too, right? You make that commitment to me this morning, yes, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll absolutely. In the second hour today, as well. So. Tell me about what's going on today. What is the schedule today for what you're going to be seeing up there in Cable and Hayward?
Saturday is really the main event day. It includes some of the more popular or famous Berkey events. So today there's going to be the 30K American Berkey Skate. There will also be the Super Tour Men and Women's American Birkebeiner. And then there's an event known as the Spirit of 35. Some of these events actually had an alternate day on Thursday. So we'll really find out today what the actual podium is going to look like. And then one special note, the USA Women's 2018 cross-country Olympic team, the first U.S. team to ever gain the gold medal in cross-country. Half of that team, Jesse Diggins, will be participating in the events today at the Cable Telemark Village as a normal old participant in the Birkebeiner like anybody else.
Terrific. Fantastic. Say, gentlemen, thank you so much for this. All started way back in 1205, 1206 with the original Birkebeiner events, as we described them, those rule of law events way back in Norway, alive today in Wisconsin, alive today with you. You guys are going to join me again at the end of this hour, again, the second hour as well, a couple of times. So we'll be back in touch with you. Thank you so much this morning for this information, this insight into what's going on there. We'll be back in touch with the two of you very, very shortly. Thanks, Greg, again. Thanks.
Thank you,
thanks, Gray.
Thank you, Jim.
Wonderful. And so in connection with this international notion that we have this morning, this idea that we are all connected, as I said, at the end of our second hour, we're going to be spending some time talking about other places in the world in which rule of law issues have been important, including places like Brazil and Pakistan, even Germany. We're going to begin this morning our rule of law exposition, our review, with things happening just yesterday in our own world right here in America. It has to do with guns. Regrettably, once again, that issue in America, a continuing challenge for legislators, for executors, and for all of us when it comes to keeping us safe and secure. The two issues we're going to talk about this morning, the two events this morning related to firearms. We know that the Supreme Court this coming week is going to be addressing another issue about whether or not bump stocks, these devices that turn a semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon, whether those should be subject to regulation by the ATF. That's coming up before our United States Supreme Court this coming week, oral argument on that. And we also know that just yesterday something significant happened with a major gun rights organization. When we come back, we're going to talk about what happened yesterday in a Manhattan jury courtroom. Stay with us for that all-important discussion.
Talking about a world where all is free, but it just couldn't be, and only a fool would say that. Only a fool would say that.
Your home for the devil's advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. The South Carolina Republican primary is today. Donald Trump facing off against Nikki Haley, who told supporters in Mount Pleasant what she's standing for.
Think education, think welfare, think health care, think mental health. We'll dramatically reduce the size of the federal government, but we'll empower people on the ground.
At CPAC, Republican Senator J.D. Vance says our country needs to manufacture more things here and focus on our country first.
We don't make enough of our own stuff, and at the same time that we don't make enough of our own stuff, they want us to send all of our critical weapons overseas. Well, what happens, God forbid, if the Chinese invade Taiwan?
A New York jury's found Wayne LaPierre guilty of fraudulently spending NRA donor funds. CBS's Errol Barnett.
It is yet another victory for New York Attorney General Letitia James, who's been investigating the NRA spending practices for 4 years.
He's been ordered to pay back more than $4.3 million. CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Bucks beat the Timberwolves. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks' first game after the All-Star break was just what the doctor ordered. The Bucks with a 112-107 win in Minnesota. Giannis with 33 points. Lillard with 21. Malik Beasley with 14 in the second half. Milwaukee dominated the third quarter but looked tired at the end, head coach Doc Rivers.
You know, one thing you can see with our team, I don't know if there's any place to do it, but you can see conditioning because they're playing hard. They were gassed. There were a bunch of guys gassed on our team for sure. That's what happens when you play hard defense and hard offense. So we're going to have to try to condition in games, you know, to get that because we have to get used to playing that way for 48 minutes.
In New Orleans, a fourth quarter fight left four players ejected from the game, including Jimmy Butler. The Miami Heat went on to win 106-95 over the Pelicans. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine and a high of 35. Mostly clear tonight, breezy 29. And breezy for your Sunday, partly sunny 52. In the upper 50s to near 60 on your Monday, but still on the breezy side. Tuesday, breezy and 63 degrees. Currently, 13 degrees.
Do you owe back taxes? Call Tax Solutions now and get some help. For a limited time, the IRS offers a tax forgiveness program called the Fresh Start Initiative. Our team can make it easier for you to pay back taxes, avoid tax liens, and get a fresh start.
I call Tax Solutions now, and they got the IRS off my back.
Call Tax Solutions now. 800-281-8193. 800-281-8193. 800-281-8193.
Less calories and fat, and oh so delicious. It's what every light bread wants to be. Leave it to the bakers of Village Hearth to have the perfect recipes that pack goodness and flavor into every package while still keeping it trim. With Village Hearth light bread and buns, you can lighten up on the calories and fat without losing out on the great taste. There's simply more to savor and nothing to sacrifice. With our light wheat, light 12 grain, and light Italian bread and buns, there's a light, tasty favorite for everyone in the family. Village Hearth, baking our best for you.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media Radio Network recognizes the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Kelvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Echoes of Empowerment, Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl Ingram.
It's Oscar season, and since the award started in 1929, more than 3,000 Oscars have been awarded. But only 60 have been won by black actors. The first black woman to win Best Lead Actress was Halle Berry for the film Monsters Ball in 2002. Denzel Washington earned Best Lead Actor for Training Day also in 2002, marking the first time both of the top Oscars were won by African Americans. That hasn't happened since. Listen for more black history stories here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw.
540 AM and 101.1 FM. WAUK.
Welcome back to our continuing discussion this morning. It is Saturday, February 24th, 2024, talking about all things law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Significant news yesterday coming out of a New York courtroom having to do with the NRA, the National Rifle Association, and its embattled leader, Wayne LaPierre. Where does this come from? What is the genesis for what happened just yesterday? A major case, a jury verdict. It's going to affect dramatically this major gun rights organization, certainly its leadership as well. We know well that this particular lawsuit was brought way back in 2020, about almost 3.5, almost 4 years ago, and initiated by the Attorney General of the state of New York. Her name is Letitia James. You've heard her before. Yes, this is the same government official, the same civil prosecutor in the state of New York, responsible for enforcing New York state law, who's also brought the most recent case involving Donald Trump, his sons, and that organization. In that case involving valuations, we know that just yesterday, the judge in that case, Judge Engoron, entered the final judgment. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. This is the same prosecutor, the same civil litigator who brought this lawsuit, discreet from, apart from the case against the Trump Organization and Donald Trump, this one against the NRA. She charged that as a nonprofit group in New York since 1871, responsible for following the rules and regulations of incorporation and of status there in the state of New York, identifying in the initial civil complaint a great number of financial troubles, internal conflicts that all had led to a years-long pattern of financial misconduct and even corruption. Even corruption is what she has alleged during the course of this trial, a weeks-long trial that just concluded yesterday. The jury, a jury, not a judge. In the other case, Judge Engoron deciding the case. In this case, a jury, after a week of deliberations, found the group's former leader, Wayne LaPierre, you have heard of him in the past, had in fact used NRA funds as a part of the nonprofit group itself, to do what? To pay for some personal expenses, including things like vacations and luxury flights for his relatives, rides on super yachts. Jurors found that Wayne LaPierre and others involved with him had misspent about $5.4 million in organization funds. He's repaid some of that, as he said during the course of the trial, but still is on the line for about $4.35 million. Now, in addition to Wayne LaPierre, the leader, by the way, he resigned right before the start of this trial. He's no longer in that position of responsibility, prompting the course of the trial for the NRA lawyers, the lawyers for the company, for the association, to distance himself from Mr. LaPierre. They were arguing that while he, LaPierre, had done some good things for the organization, we've talked a lot about Second Amendment issues here on this broadcast, his identity and his extravagances, which I just described, including, among other things, some Beverly Hills shopping sprees, was not a part of the mission, the purpose of the NRA, not synonymous with the group's mission and direction and focus. The lawyer for the group said the NRA is not Wayne LaPierre. So right inside the trial itself, or the period of the last couple of weeks, a division, if you will. This is not a consolidated defense against the claims brought by the attorney general. This is a division among them. And sure enough, during the course of the trial, that became clear. Beyond Wayne LaPierre in this major case, having been found responsible for his misspending, his negligence, his purposeful misconduct, and even his corruption, defendants also included the former treasurer, his name is Wilson Phillips, and general counsel, his name is John Frazier. They both also found by the jury to have failed in their duties to the organization. Phillips, among other things, required to pay about $2 million. All of this coming out of the case just yesterday, presented by Attorney General Letitia James. A great deal of very specific information about the misuses of these funds, including things like the use of helicopters to avoid traffic during trips to NASCAR races, showing that LaPierre sought reimbursement for mosquito treatments, landscaping at his own house, all sorts of things like that during the course of the trial. Why is this significant? Well, it plainly signals not only the work and the function of an attorney general responsible for enforcing state law. That's what we've talked about a lot on this broadcast, in this and at least that other case involving Donald Trump, but also disclosed and revealed in this very public forum. Yes, that's right. It's a public trial. The corruption, the fraud, the misconduct that has been a part of this association in recent years. An awful lot of people look at this and other difficulties inside that organization as the beginning of the end, if not the middle of the eventual demise of the NRA. It still continues to be an entity that begins to be the subject of a lot of discussion along the way. As the courtroom responded to all of this, of course. The NRA going to have to be responsible for not only responding to the jury verdict, but also individuals responsible for paying back the millions of dollars misspent during the course of this conduct by them for years and years and years. The senior vice president for law and policy of a group called Every Town for Gun Safety said, we're 2 months into 2024, and the NRA has already managed to lose this trial, their longtime leader, and whatever political relevance it had left. The verdict confirms what we've seen in recent elections, in state legislatures, and in halls of Congress. The gun lobby, he said, has never been weaker. And indeed, to the extent that we have major issues with respect to guns in America, misuse, abuse of firearms. The NRA's lobbying in Congress presumably has had a huge impact upon the failure of our federal legislature, state legislatures as well, to pass laws to impact and address our gun problem in America. We know as well that as much as that civil case going on and concluding just yesterday in that Manhattan courtroom, we know that earlier in this month, in February, there was another case. This is a criminal case pending in a Michigan courtroom. And during the course of this past month, Michigan jurors there in a criminal case, but 11 hours of deliberation in a criminal case against a woman named Jennifer Crumbley, C-R-U-M-B-L-E-Y, found guilty of involuntary manslaughter for the gun rampage, the horrific event committed by her teenage son, who carried out, yes, that's right, the state's deadliest shooting more than 2 years ago. The trial, unmistakably, since the time of its prosecution there by Michigan prosecutors, and certainly since the time of the return of this verdict, finding, convicting her in four counts of involuntary manslaughter, one for each student her son killed in what, once again, is Michigan's deadliest school shooting ever. Plainly, this is sort of a lightning rod for issues about parental responsibility in a time when these cases, all too frequent in our nation, are involving guns and being carried out by minors. It was perhaps the most high-profile example of prosecutors seeking to hold parents responsible for violent crimes committed by their children. There have been others, other charges of reckless conduct or neglect, kind of a larger push to identify accountability inside these parents when they're suspected of enabling deadly violence by their children. But the charges against Ms. Crumbley, in particular, were more serious, and that's why this test case is so very important. Along the way, during the course of the trial, a lot of aggravating factors that make this simply not a case involving indifference or turning one's back to what your son or daughter is doing, mostly sons in the history of our recent mass shootings by young people. In the course of closing argument during the course of this case, the prosecutor emphasized the severity of these charges and reflecting on the negligence, the horrific crime that resulted from that incapacity, that decision made by the parents to not do anything when confronted with lots and lots of indications. Ethan, the son, has already pled guilty to 24 charges, including first-degree murder. He was sentenced last year already. He is going to be spending the rest of his life in prison without the possibility of parole. Did not testify in his mother's trial. The father, James Crumbley, he is going to be tried separately in March. So his trial is still coming up. But along the way, we know that in this trial of mother of Jennifer Crumbley herself, lots of indications that this was a, not unique, but a case where an awful lot of facts indicated they should have gotten not only signals about what their son was doing, his crisis situation, but also their capacity to respond to it. The prosecutor has plainly presented a lot of evidence that Ms. Crumbley should have noticed that her son's distress was significant, should have stopped him from committing this act of, frankly, just unspeakable violence there. Said that the prosecutors along the way said that she and her husband didn't do any one of a number of tragically small and easy things that they could have done to prevent all this from happening. They focused in part upon Ethan's access to a firearm. But jurors also had to wrestle with a lot of other information. They were shown messages that Ethan sent to a friend in April of 2021 complaining of insomnia, some messages to this friend, paranoia, hearing voices. They were also shown messages that, as the jurors were, that he sent to his mother in March of 21, in which he suggested that their home was haunted by a demon. And his mother, prosecutors pointed out during the course of the trial, didn't always respond to that. Now, in her testimony, Crumbly herself said that Ethan's parents had joked for years about the house being haunted, but there was even more beyond that. The government also showed messages exchanged between Crumbly and her husband. Some colleagues, some friends also along the way, suggested that Ms. Crumbly had paid more attention to their two horses and an extramarital affair than her son's needs and the attention that necessarily he should have been getting at the time. Significantly, there was a meeting between Crumbly and school officials that took place about 2 hours, just 2 hours before the attack. Crumbly and her husband had been called to the high school after Ethan wrote troubling things on a math worksheet, including the phrase, blood everywhere. Crumbly said that after a counselor shared concerns about that event, those communications, they decided that her son could stay at school that day. They did not search his backpack, which, of course, contained the pistol that he would eventually use to effectuate this horrific mass shooting on his schoolmates. Beyond that, the teenager, the young man, Ethan here, had written about a plan to cause bloodshed. He had drawings of guns, pleas for help regarding his mental health. All of that a part of the trial. And why do I mention that? That's all grisly. It's all very, very graphic. Because it does underscore the strength of this particular prosecution. An awful lot of people saying things like, well, gee, does this open up responsibility, liability in a criminal setting, maybe even a civil setting for other parents? And the answer is that, yes, it does indeed identify circumstances under which a juror will find parents responsible. But I would offer that it does not open up the exposure of parents if indeed there are some less significant events than the ones presented in this particular trial. This is compelling evidence of parents who had an awful lot of information, a lot of an indication that their son Ethan was not only in trouble, but planned to do exactly what he did. And yes, indeed, the jurors in this case found that the parents will be held responsible under these circumstances. More difficult cases will be situations where you don't have this compelling, huge nature of information out there, huge information to support these four counts of involuntary manslaughter. Guns in America, a lot of information, a lot of things going on in our courts. The civil conviction, if you will, of the NRA and its chief Wayne LaPierre just yesterday. This matter in Michigan, and we know once again that this coming week on the 26th, the Supreme Court is going to be determining whether or not bump stocks in America should be regulated under federal law by the ATF. Bump stocks, once again, these mechanisms that turn semi-automatic weapons into machine guns, which are indeed in violation, are illegal under federal law. A huge amount out there having to do with firearms in America just this past week, just this past month. We will see if indeed all of this prompts our legislature, as we have talked in the past, to do things, to remedy these things in a way that we know will be effective. When we come back, we're going to talk more about other cases in our courts in America. Stay with us for that all-important discussion.
Wait, I wanted you to share my life. I had no doubt in my mind. And it's been you, woman, right down the line.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Matt Nair on air.
Hovde, Eric Hovde now. He will be running against Tammy Baldwin.
He's not a Wisconsinite. He threw his hat in the ring from California. This is Tim Michaels all over again. Businessman who walks in, goes, well, I can take care of this. And Wisconsin says, no. Good to know you. Here's some Kringle. Go back home.
Is that how we politely blow people off now? Is to take a Kringle and go away.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
And we are back in this, our final segment of our first hour here on Saturday morning, February 24th, 2024. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for joining my producer, Calvin, who's right with me here in the studios of Civic Media here in downtown Waukesha. We are once again, as promised, going to be bringing into our discussion my two good friends and colleagues, Greg and Gray, who are right now in Cable, Wisconsin. They're at the Birkebeiner cross-country ski race, the single largest cross-country ski race in North America, talking with us in the next few moments here about what they're seeing, what they're experiencing there. And also, once again, as I said at the first time that we chatted with them this morning, bringing together this notion that sports are a part of our lives. And this particular one, having to do with the Birkebeiner, the name of that coming out of some significant rule of law events, some govern events, way back in 1205, 1206 in Norway, But in 2024, delighted that my friends Greg and Gray are with me once again to join me in this segment to talk more about what they're seeing on the ground right there in Cable, also in Hayward. Many, many people gather together with this major sporting event that celebrates life and the good things that America and the state of Wisconsin is all about. Greg, glad to have you with me once again.
Hey, Mike, thank you. Thank you for letting us come on your show today. Big G here with Gray here, and we're up in Cable, Wisconsin. Thanks to the Cable Natural History Museum for providing us this broadcast venue this afternoon, and representing WBZH Radio, the Buzz of the North, up here in Hayward. Thanks again, Jim. I really appreciate letting us be on the show today. And, man, boy, this event here, it attracts people worldwide. And I know you were talking about how the event and history of the event and everything. So yeah, there's just we were over to the trailhead yesterday at the Mount Telmark area over there and right here. Man, just all sorts of things going on. They got a great setup over there. Really a streamlined event this year, too. If you take Highway 63, I mean, they're bussing everybody in. They've really got it well organized. And, you know, Mother Nature, and where you're at, Jim, are you down in Waukesha or Madison, or where are you
at? That's exactly right. We are right here in Waukesha, overcast, but no snow today. I guess no snow up there either. But that highway between Cable and Hayward in northwestern Wisconsin, just beautiful area up there. Passable, plainly, right, Greg? And also the support
beautiful
for this wonderful sporting event. Yeah, yeah.
And there is snow. I mean, it's amazing that you can be driving three and then all of a sudden going by the trailhead there, and they got a beautiful track. It's 1 to 3 feet of manufactured snow. Amazing.
And the temperature there, Greg, today for this wonderful event is... Turn you into a weatherman for a moment here.
Actually, right around in the 30 degree mark, low 30s today, so it's pretty decent condition.
Right. To melt the snow today, the participants will be comfortable.
Very good.
Yeah, yesterday it was in the 20s, the week has been 40s and mid 40s. So, I mean, hats off to the people that manufactured the snow and able to keep the snow conditions over there. So.
And Greg, you know, I know we've got these major events going on today, and we're going to have you back again if you stay with me next hour for a couple more discussions. Talk with me a little bit about the children, also youth involved in some of the activities this past week. This is a sport for the entire family, and certainly that's true of the Birkebeiner there in northwestern Wisconsin there as well.
That's exactly right, Jim. They have events for the youth, any under 18. They've got an event called the Barney Berkey?
Yeah, the Barney Berkey is traditionally has been a youth shortened circuit. This year they had to do it as a fun run event. But there's actually even under 10 waves that depart as part of the there's junior Berkeys that are still ski events this year. All of them for 8-10 and under, and there's some pretty impressive skiers that can claim the age of 8 and 9 years old. I'm kind of blown away.
Yeah, I don't think, I don't think the track or the conditions are any different than if we had a regular snowfall. There's nobody was really, everybody was really, I think, pretty satisfied with the track conditions and everything out there. So, worldwide event, like you say, attracts
and
people
part
from
of,
all over the world.
That's great. And part of the celebration, as I understand it, it's also, I think you mentioned this before, Greg, the costuming. And also we've got some canine involvement. Is that right? There's some dogs there as well. Also a huge part of the celebration.
Yeah, I'll actually be weighing in at the beginning of the next hour here to talk about some of the crazy Thursday. But one of those is traditionally a ski-jor event. Of course, for those not familiar with ski-jor, that refers to a single cross-country skier attached to a single dog in kind of a cross between cross-country skiing and sled dog racing. That this year has turned into just a fun run event with your dog. But yeah, that would be the at a Canicross this year, canine cross event, as opposed to the normal ski jor event it would have been in years past.
So is that the Barkebiner then?
That would be the Barkebiner, exactly.
So. Perfect. And again, reference to history, but also an affirmation of the great involvement of our pets as well in this terrific event going on right now in the area. That sounds just great. Say, well, you two guys, you'll stay with me again for next hour. I'd like to get back to you a couple of times next hour as well, chat more about some of the local color there, the celebration, and this important event, again, not only in our history, but in world history as well. Will you come back again next hour and chat with me more about all this?
Absolutely,
we'll be back
Jim.
With you, Jim. Thanks again for having us on your show, and thank you to our sponsors, Lakewood Cafe and Hayward on Railroad Street. We've got the Lakeside Property Service of Park Falls, Wisconsin, Advanced Printing in Hayward, Wisconsin, and River and Rains Wilderness Boutique in Hayward, Wisconsin. So let's bring the broadcast together.
And another special thank you to the Cable Natural History Museum for hosting this media space for us to broadcast from today.
All good people, all good entities, and all supporting what we're doing here on the Civic Media radio stations and what you're broadcasting all about there from Cable and Hayward in this wonderful part of our state. Thanks so much, gentlemen. We'll be back in touch again very soon.
Thank you, Jim.
Wonderful. Good. So, you know, as a part of our discussion every single Saturday morning, we also solicit calls. And that number, of course, is 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. And we've got just a minute or so, but we do have a caller already on the line, perhaps responding to some of our rule of law related information this morning. I'm going to take the call from Rico. Rico, if you don't have a complete chance to discuss with you your issue, we'll do it at the top of the second hour. But Rico, glad to have you with me this morning on our broadcast.
Am I on?
You are on, Rico. Absolutely. Glad to have you with me. Go right ahead.
Do you want me to ask my question now, or should I wait till after the top?
We've got about a minute or so, Calvin's telling me. So why don't you pose your question now, and I can ponder it then over the top of the hour. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll get to it quickly, Jim, because it does fall in line with what you were talking about earlier. But I want to go to an earlier case that took place in Kenosha, Wisconsin, over here, in particular the Rittenhouse case.
Yes.
And what has baffled me, Jim, about this, maybe you could help me understand. I've often wondered how did the Judge Schroeder, I believe, and I believe it was Mark Richards was Kyle's attorney, how did they beat that under 18 possession of a firearm for someone that was underneath 18 years old? Because he was 17 years old, and I've often wondered this, Jim.
Sure. And you know what? Great question, Rico. You know what? I am going to take that up, and we're going to talk a bit more about the Kyle Rittenhouse matter when we come back at the top of the next hour. Rico, thank you for your question this morning. We'll chat about that at the top of our next hour.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK. Nightlight with Peach Waba.
Civic Media's Rich LoCascio. Could you introduce me as a wrestler right now? You could call me like the Punching Bag or the Patsy or something.
From Green Bay, Wisconsin, the Punching Bag, Peach Waba.
Now I'd be looking across the ring at my opponent's eyes getting really wide as he got ready to wail on me.
Nightlight with Peach Waba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Stacy Lynn.